You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.
Hello and welcome to Line Noise with the support of Cupra. It is an absolute pleasure to welcome Vienna via Manchester House Don Salute, a young artist who is on the verge of very big things, to the show. Their new album, True Magic, is out on July the 12th. The interview was great, but I have to apologise a little bit for the audio quality. I'm sorry. Rob, one of our master technicians, did all he could to make it sound better, and he has done a lot, so thanks, Rob. But it is still kind of far from the sparkling sound quality that you deserve. I apologise for that, but I hope you still enjoy the interview in which we touch on everything from Austrian drum and bass to Rusty's essential mix. Hello and welcome to Line Noise with the support of Cupra. It is an absolute pleasure to welcome a young artist who is on the verge of very big things indeed, with a new album, True Magic, coming out on July the 12th. Salute, welcome, and how on earth are you?
Very, very good. The sun is shining, as you can see. It's a nice day in Manchester.
How was Sonar? How you played recently?
I loved it. It was so great. Before my set, I went to see High back-to-back Jennifer Cardini, and that properly got me in the mood. And the crowd was amazing during my set. I was able to play stuff I wouldn't usually play in like festival sets, and everything I played felt like it went down really well. I was super happy with it.
Oh, nice. I mean, it's been an amazing few years for you. What's been your highlight when you look back?
I think getting to tour outside of Europe for the first time, like, that was a moment for me. The first time I went to Australia was now a year and a half ago, and that was sort of when I realised how crazy it was that there were people on the other side of the world sort of coming to my shows and engaging with my music in such an amazing way. But for me, I think personally, the highlight has been like finishing the album while doing that, while touring so much. It's been something I wanted to do for a long time, and it's finally happened. I'm super happy with that.
Was it difficult for you to write while you were touring so much?
So I had to, basically I really struggled to write while I'm on the road. So I had to like take weeks off in the middle of touring just to rent a studio in the countryside with my friends and sort of write there uninterrupted, because on the road I'm usually too tired or my head's not in the right space. So the album was written over the course of, in total, I'd say 6 weeks, but spread across the year, sort of in very short bursts, so I could just focus on that.
You're from Vienna originally, right?
Yeah.
What was the dance music scene like there when you were growing up?
There was a lot of like harder techno. Vienna is sort of like Berlin's little sibling in a way, or tries to be anyway. And there's a lot of drum and bass, which is sort of a hangover from like the 90s and early 2000s. But Austria's always been like a hotspot for drum and bass. And that was sort of my in into dance music. I started producing drum and bass when I was like 13. And there were people to look up to, like Cameron Crooked and Mephius, like all the really big, big players. So that was kind of what it was like. House was sort of there, but never as big as techno.
And I read that you kind of got your introduction to club culture by YouTube videos, right?
Yeah, so it was that and like video game soundtracks. So I like played a lot of FIFA and found grime and drum and bass and jungle on there, which led me to YouTube, where I found sort of grime sets by DJ Simsy and Wally and Russell, and that's how I then eventually found dubstep. So I mean, I was a 12-year-old kid, so YouTube was kind of the only way for me to access this kind of stuff.
When you actually started going to clubs, what was the thing that most surprised you after seeing the videos?
The thing is, around that time, there wasn't that much footage of what happened inside clubs online. That was only really a thing that started happening a bit later. So I didn't actually know what to expect at all. But what I didn't realise was the amount of drugs that people took. That was actually one thing that really, really shocked me, because I'd never been exposed to that before. but also how much of a community feel there is to going out and how important community is in the world of dance music. Because through going out to clubs, that's how I kind of met a lot of people from different forms of music.
Because you moved to Brighton at 18, right?
I moved to Brighton when I was 18 for university. I went to study music technology. But then sort of realised after a year that I probably just wanted to focus on production in terms of just like working my own career rather than trying to become like a sound engineer. So I dropped out. Stayed in Brighton for a little bit and ended up moving to Manchester in 2016.
So you said somewhere you found your real home in Manchester. What was it about Manchester that felt like home?
I think at the time, Manchester was a place where a lot of my friends in music lived, like the Bondex guys and the Karma Kid and Fono. And there were so many good parties happening. I always felt like I was among like-minded people, and I felt like I'd finally found people who understood me musically. I think back home in Vienna, because Vienna's a bit behind when it comes to dance music. When I moved to the UK, that was kind of one thing I was looking for, community within music, and I found that in Manchester, which is kind of why I've stuck around for so long now. It's been 8 years, and I can't really see myself leaving anytime soon, just because I feel like this is home now.
I mean, I as I said, I lived in Manchester a long, long, long time ago. What are the good places to go to Manchester now?
I would say the best place to go to is the White Hotel, which is my favourite club in the world. It's a small sort of 400 cab club in Salford, in sort of an industrial area. And it's one of the only clubs in Manchester that has a long license. So it opens until 7 a.m. And it's probably one of the clubs where you hear sort of more experimental dance music. So anything from like ambient stuff to sort of shoegaze and a piano. Like, it's so musically diverse. And the people that go there because they love music. I think the White Hotel is probably one of the best clubs in the UK, hands down.
What is the most Manchester thing you do? Not necessarily music, but what's like the one thing you do that people are like, oh, you're so Manchester?
That's a good question. I think I'm now more likely to like speak to strangers in public. I feel like when I'm in London and I do that around my friends, people are like, you don't do that here, it's weird. but to me now, it kind of just feels normal. People up here are so friendly. So I think that's infected me.
I mean, you've got a bit of a Manchester accent, right? It sounds like.
I don't know, like, I say Bath rather than Bath now, and I say grass rather than grass. I don't know if that qualifies as me sounding Mancunian, but I think when I'm in Manchester for long enough and I'm around my Manchester mates, start sort of surfacing my accent a little bit.
So I'm interested, you were talking about getting into music and you were talking about drum and bass and jungle and like, you know, there's a real strong, I would say, real strong kind of UK garage feel to your music. You know, a lot of British sounds. What's it going to appeal about?
I think it was just like, it was unlike anything I'd ever heard. Because I grew up, sort of the house music that I heard when I was young was sort of electro house, like German electro house, French electro, French house, hard style. But I'd never heard anything like sort of garage UK music. It's a lot more syncopated. It took influences from sort of broader palettes from across the world. And there were elements of hip-hop and rap in it that I really enjoyed because I grew up on R&B and hip-hop. There was a lot of, like, sampling R&B records. So it felt like, as someone who loved jazz and gospel and R&B growing up, kind of felt like the UK fused those things with dance music so well. That was just immediately drawn to it.
I mean, I hear a lot of Todd Edwards in your music, but then I hear a lot of Todd Edwards and a lot of people in music. Is he a big influence?
Yeah, Todd Edwards is one of my favourite artists of all time. He's created some of the most amazing garage records ever. He's a big hero of mine.
You released Your Heart in 2018. This might seem like a stupid question, but do you consider that your debut album?
No, my debut album was Trumatic. I put out Condition in 2018, which is essentially three EPs rolled into one. So I released it as Condition 1, Condition 2, and Condition 3. And then I put it all in one. But it was released over the course of nearly 2 years. So it's not, I wouldn't really consider that an album. Trumatic is the first full-length project that I've written to be one body of work.
How important was it for you to do an album?
For me, I still love the album format so much. It means so much to me. I'm still very much a person who loves listening to an album start to finish, no skips. For me personally, it just felt like I've always wanted to make an album, but I always wanted to wait until I'd reached a certain point in how confident I was in my music and my output that I could make one. So Brighton, Trumatic has been like one of the greatest experiences of my life. It's been one of the most enjoyable, also one of the most stressful, but the most rewarding thing I've ever done, I think. I'm super proud of it, and I think that it just marks a really nice moment for me personally, but also as an artist.
What was your goal when you set out to make it? Was it to make like something cohesive with no skip? What were you thinking?
So I didn't really go into the writing of the album with much of a plan. All I knew is that I didn't want to sort of develop a concept before I made the album. I just wanted to write a bunch of good songs. I wanted to approach it like Quincy Jones would approach a record he was producing for a big pop artist, just a string of really good pop songs, essentially. And I loved Disclosure's first album. I think it's probably, when it comes to crossover pop and dance music, I think it's the best example of how to fuse the two things. And that album was hugely influential and also put a lot of kids onto dance music. And you know, that album like, came out 11 years ago. And I think what I set out to do with Trumatic is kind of similar to what Guy and Howard set out to do when they made Settle, just to make a really strong dance pop album that would hopefully introduce people who are not really into dance music or house specifically to it. I think that was sort of my goal when I started making this album.
I think it's refreshing that you're using the words dance pop, because there are some people that don't like the idea of pop coming to market, and some people will insist on the more underground.
Look, I mean, tastes vary, right? I love dance music. Dance music is one of my big loves, but so is pop. And I grew up on a really healthy diet of 70s, 80s and 90s pop music. And I love R&B, I love good songwriting, and you know, some of the best dance music ever created is instrumental, but equally some of the best dance music ever created is very poppy. If you think about One More Time by Daft Punk, that is essentially a pop tune. And it's an amazing song. Pop doesn't have to be a negative, dirty word. If the music's good, the music's good.
And you've got a very impressive range of guests on the album as well. How did you go around getting them? Did you have like a wish list?
I had a bit of a wish list, but to be honest with you, nearly everyone on that album is a friend of mine. And I literally reached out to my friends and was like, do you want to be part of this album? That was kind of the idea behind this whole album, is to it's a very collaborative project, not just in terms of the features, but also in terms of the people behind the scenes working on additional production and stuff. So I've got some of my best friends playing instruments across the album, some of my best friends doing backing vocals and stuff. So it felt natural to sort of, I'm so lucky to be friends with such amazing people, amazing musicians. So most of those people were just a tech fluid. So that made the process of writing the album and wrapping it up so much better as well.
Rina Sawayama is one of them. How did she end up on the album? A friend of yours, some kind of thing? Or?
Yeah, I've known her for 10 years. And I've worked on some of her stuff before. I did some additional production on her first album. I produced a track she did in like 2017. I've watched her grow as an artist. It's been amazing to see her blossom into this incredible pop star. And, you know, we've tried to work together on stuff before for my project, but she's been so busy touring the world. And now that she's in the off-season, I just called her and was like, do you want to feature on this track? And because she finally has the time to sort of do other stuff, and also because she's been trying to get into doing more dance stuff as well, it felt like the perfect moment to get her on the track. And yeah, we were both really happy with how that turned out.
There's a drum and bass song on the album as well, Bonus Rounds.
Yeah.
Was it important for you to get some sort of jungle on there?
Yeah, I think I wanted this album to showcase what I'm about. Like, there's some faster moments on the album, there's some slower moments on the album, and I think putting the drum and bass tune as sort of a 1 minute interlude was a really nice and very succinct way of throwing back to sort of the time when I was drum and bass producing. I've always thought that if I'm going to make an album, there has to be some sort of element of drum and bass in there, even if it's just for a little bit.
What do you want people to get from this album? What do you want people to sort of, the reaction to be?
I don't think it's any deeper than I want people to listen to it and feel happy, joyful. I mean, most of the album is quite euphoric. I want it to be an album that people associate with good memories. I want people to listen to it and listen. I'm not really setting out to do very much more than make people dance and make people happy. I think that's as simple as that.
Are you playing Glastonbury again this year?
Yeah, I'm playing on Saturday.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Because last year you did the Essential Mix, right?
I did, yeah, I did.
Was that like a big thing for you? Because, I mean, in my head, like, the Essential Mix is like one of the biggest things, you know.
So that one was actually, I mean, it was the Glastonbury Essential Mix, but I've actually got my proper Essential Mix coming next month. It is a huge deal for me because I grew up on Essential Mixes. The Rusty Essential Mix from 2012 is probably one of my most listened to mixes of all time. Some of my favorite musical discoveries have come from Essential Mixes, and I think it's like the highest honor as a DJ to be asked to do one. So yeah, it's amazing. And as well, also, you're given 2 hours to essentially show people what you're about, which is like a huge task, because I want to make it almost like a history of myself. And so my influences as well is the stuff I make and play. So yeah, it's an amazing honor to be able to do something like that.
And last kind of thing, I mean, I don't know if you're thinking beyond this. Are you thinking beyond the album at all at the moment? Or is it kind of like get the album out and then sort of see?
No, I mean, obviously, you know, one step at a time. I've got the tour coming up later this year where I'm starting to do some sort of production bits, sort of bringing the album to life a little bit, and then next year doing the live show. But I would love to do more songwriting for people, more production for people. I think, you know, I've spent a lot of time now writing with artists and sort of leaning into the pop thing a little bit more and sort of giving me an appetite to work more in my capacity. But then after that, I'm already thinking about the next album. I don't quite know what it's going to sound like, but it's fun thinking about what the next project could sound like.
You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.